Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, and we are waiting for our guest to join us, and his name is Dr. Robert Strachan, and then we'll be bringing you the show. So, first of all, I'd like to welcome all of you. Wow, here we are in another new year. Another new year. Amazing. Dr. Zamperona and myself have been doing radio shows about holistic medicine since 1988, believe it or not. And we have literally thousands of shows. When we started, radio shows were actually on the radio, believe it or not. And the only way you could listen to them was to be in the local area where the radio show was being broadcast. And then we used to save tapes of all our shows and actually sell audio tapes that probably people don't even have players for anymore. This was before CDs. Haven't things moved along phenomenally quickly? And every single day there's a new device. But yet, natural healing remains the same. And if you are interested in going back in time, Dr. Zamperone and I, every single year, take a group to the island of Jamaica, where we actually live with shamanic healers for a week. And you get a taste of what life was like. But I have to say, believe it or not, even the shamanic healers and indigenous witch doctor type people way out in the jungle who know all about the healing plants of Jamaica, they actually have cell phones. I'm blown away. The last time we went, they too had cell phones. So pretty incredible. They'll now call each other, Aman, and ask, is a particular healing plant in someone else's neighborhood that we want to collect to make a specific medicine? You know, it's just incredible. Now, Dr. Zamperone and I do similar classes in Florida as well as New York many times every single year. So all you need to do is go to naturalnurse.com and send a message, and then you can always look at our schedule or calendar, and we list all of the things that we're doing. In fact, in the next week, I have six, so that means every single day in the next week is an event in Florida, many of which you get CEU credits for if you are a professional, and they would include nurses, midwives, acupuncturists, dietitians, massage therapists. All of those professionals get CEU credits for taking our classes and workshops. And if you are not in need of that kind of credit, then you get a certification. And the certification comes from Natural Alternatives, Health Education, and Multimedia. And that can be used as an adjunctive education, since it is CEU certified, for all other professionals, as a matter of fact. And of course, if you just want to do it for yourself and your family, or if you're thinking about, wow, it's a new year, perhaps I want to have a career in natural medicine, we have a very specific course called Career Counseling in Natural Medicine that will allow you to get on your way to studying how to use natural medicine for yourself, your family, and, of course, doing it as a profession where you can help other people as well. And, of course, that does require a bit of study, as it should. But we do tell you where the best courses would be, what's licensed in your state, what's certified in your state, and all about how you could get on board. So all kinds of reasons you might want to learn natural medicine. One is to take care of yourself. Two, take care of your family. Three, take care of your friends. And four, do it professionally and take care of others. And if you're interested in going on any of our events or joining us in Jamaica, that trip is completely scheduled. We're leaving March 12th to the 17th. And we will be having a beautiful education vacation, which also carries certification and CE credits if you want them, or just come and learn a step back in history with the ancient indigenous healers of Jamaica, our 27th year of doing this trip. So we'd love to have you on board. You can get in touch at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. So today we have as our guest Dr. Robert Dratkin, who is a medical doctor. And he's a healthcare provider, board certified in internal medicine, medical oncology, and palliative care. He is in active practice working to save lives and improve the quality of life through the education of his patients. He provides up-to-date knowledge and guides patients through their illnesses, through exercises and diets. He has been in active medical practice for over 36 years, and he is sharing his age, 71 years old, a couple years on me, not too many there. And he started training as a bodybuilder when he was in his 50s. That's impressive how many people start that late in life and turn around their health and wellness. He has been a competitive bodybuilder for 17 years and has won many titles and contests. On today's show, Dr. Dratkin will discuss many things along with the benefits of intermittent fasting, along with other health tips for both young and mature individuals who want to get the most out of life. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Dratkin.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. I'm very happy to share what I've learned in the last 30 years of my practice, and I think it is our society is very much in need of changing how we view our diet, how we view our life, how we view our exercise. I think these are very important aspects of living that have been neglected, and I think that the knowledge is out there, but most people don't really have healthy lifestyles.
That's for sure. Now, I'm looking at your website, drrobertmdfacp.com, and if listeners are in the car and listening, because the show will be archived, it is actually posted there. And there you can see a picture of Dr. Dratkin, and you can see him in action, as he says. Now, let's go back in time. It's a few decades ago. What made you decide to become a doctor in the first place?
Well, that's a difficult question for me. I guess I became a doctor because my daddy was a doctor, and it was assumed that when I was born that I would follow in his footsteps. I can't argue for or against that. It's just what has happened.
Okay, well, no, I'm not saying we should argue for or against it, but that's a very interesting answer that your father was a doctor, so he was a model for you. And at the times that he was practicing, I would say, and I'm guessing, that actually lifestyle medicine, although it wasn't called that, was much more a part of the doctor's milieu. I mean, when I had doctors, when I was a young girl, and I'm just a couple years younger than you, the doctors came to the house, and they were part of our family, basically. You know, my mother would call them, I'm sorry to say, any time, day or night, and they would come over and look at, okay, what did she eat? I mean, they would actually care about that. How does this person look? How do they smell and feel? And they would look at the person. In today's medicine, especially with the advent of the electronic records, I'm noticing more and more doctors don't come anywhere near the patient, hardly ever. They're looking the other way at the computer. It's just horrendous and seems to be getting worse.
Well, I have to agree with you. The practice of medicine has changed. As you suspect, my daddy was a GP. And he did everything himself. And even in my training, we were taught to talk to our patients, understand what their life was all about. And by just talking to a patient, we would expect to know 90% of their problems without doing any type of medical testing, without even examining the patient. Of course, the exam comes next and the tests come later. But I think the art of talking to patients has lessened, and most recently due to the fact that doctors are stressed. They have to see so many patients in very little time, and the medical record and record keeping seem to have a higher priority for a variety of external reasons. But I think knowing your patient and talking to them is the most important part of being a doctor, having a relationship with your patients. And that is lessening us in my experience recently.
Well, on your website, you have wonderful, wonderful articles that you've written about your point of view. And, you know, most doctors who I know who share your point of view about being, let's say, patient-centric, because, you know, in our short discussion so far, you haven't talked about you. You have talked about the patient as being the focus, and that is probably why you became a doctor, because, you know, you had a satisfactory experience. Your dad definitely, I'm sure, took more time than 8 minutes with patients, although he certainly might have written prescriptions, as I imagine you have done as well. It wasn't the one and only intervention that was available to him in, you know, this 8-minute visit with a million people every single day. So it certainly has changed phenomenally. Now, so you got involved with being a doctor, and then time went on. And what was the next step that brought you more to, you know, what I would say, I mean, you're still doing oncology and palliative care, but you seem to have more of a view of the importance of the individual.
Well, I've always enjoyed talking to patients, and I've always felt comfortable at the bedside taking care of sick people, as opposed to having a research career, which I had in the past as well. I think really getting to know your patient, knowing their lifestyle, knowing their habits, knowing their diet and their activity level is extremely important, because today I believe the most important diseases that are killing people are lifestyles. Our lifestyle in this society is not healthy. I think we have much too much type 2 diabetes, hypertension, coronary artery disease, and I think these diseases can be completely prevented by changes in lifestyle. And it's very frustrating to hear commercials on TV and the radio recommending medications as opposed to a change in lifestyle. It's like I'm down with a certain drug because my cholesterol has decreased, but I'm not changing my lifestyle. I think these are the wrong message that people are receiving.
It's so true. Now, you are also an oncologist.
Yes, but as I've taken care of patients with malignancies, and frequently, you can manage the disease, and you can cure some patients.
Dr. Drapkin, red alert, you used the illegal cure word. You don't hear doctors talking about curing too much. So that's really wonderful.
Well, it's quite possible to cure patients today, but what becomes more important is the metabolic conditions which are due to their lifestyle, which are then become more important than the actual malignancy, which is no longer present. Take breast cancer, for instance. When you treat a patient with chemotherapy for breast cancer, like I have done hundreds of thousands of times, when women will decrease their activity level while they're on chemotherapy. So they gain weight. When the chemotherapy is no longer needed, that weight is still there. And that's how I became much more interested in making my patients, taking them back to their healthy past by changing their lifestyle with diet and exercise. And I also not only recommend certain things, but I also do them myself. So in learning to give patients recommendations for lifestyle changes, diet and exercise, I did the diet and I did the exercise. And reading about and studying diet and exercise, it's quite apparent that these are some of the most important things that people should know, should become an important part of their life so they don't get the heart disease, the hypertension, the type 2 diabetes, and so they can live much healthier, more active, longer lives. That really has become my main focus.
That's fantastic. And, you know, you mentioned women, but, you know, men get breast cancer too, of course. I'm not sure if you see them, but I just had a patient. That's why that's on my mind.
Well, I've had many patients, male patients with breast cancer. But also the analogy holds true for some of the leukemias and the lymphomas as well. And so there are many conditions that were malignant that are treatable and curable. Curable means they go away and we can't detect them. And then other things are much more important. And diet and exercise, to me, are the reason our society is not healthy, because it's not taught nutrition. If you ask somebody, do you know what's healthy to eat? Of course they say, I know exactly what's healthy to eat. And 9 times out of 10, they have no concept of what's healthy to eat.
Exactly, and that's why in our practice, as part of the intake, which you certainly don't usually see this in conventional medicine, is a 3-day diet diary, because we can't even assess or recommend anything to a patient until we get hold of the diet, because it's a waste of time. Sometimes they just want to come in and exercise, which you are a big proponent of, and we'll get into that. Many often they come in and they just want, if anything, get off their medications because they're having so many side effects and just get natural pills, like just get herbs and vitamins. But that is not going to solve the situation. We do use them, but later on, first someone has to address their diet. And everybody says they're eating healthy. And then when you get to look at the diet diary, it is loaded, high on the glycemic index, way too much sugar. Of course they're coming in there all overweight, even though they say they're eating healthy. And very low in the micronutrients, so they don't know that. They think it's healthy. And, you know, that's because most doctors just say, eat healthy. They don't tell you what that means.
That's true. When I went to medical school, we got very little training, almost no training in diet, and certainly no understanding of the benefits of exercise.
And isn't that a shame that that continues to this day?
Yes, I think it's the reason our society is not healthy, is because these basic simple concepts of nutrition and exercise are not part of the educational process. And I think education is so important. People's knowledge of how their body works is extremely important, and very few people understand how their body actually works.
That's so true. So you evolved, you became a doctor, you're still an oncologist. Let me tell you, if you're still actively seeing patients up there, because I'm in Florida too, I would definitely let people know if they need that kind of intervention. And then you evolved, because you're talking about the fact that you began your training as a bodybuilder in your 50s.
Yes.
That is impressive. Did you ever meet Dr. Life, L-I-F-E?
Yes, I actually did meet him in Las Vegas, where he has his clinic.
Because you're reminding me of him. I had him on my show, and he and I lectured together not that long ago at a conference on Long Island called the Naval Expo. Great conference, by the way. If anyone wants to come, we have those 2 a year. And he's just reminding me of the story that you have.
Well, it's. I think it's important for people to understand that they are everybody, all human beings, are endurance athletes. Your body was designed for you to be an athlete and does not adapt well to inactivity. You have the long legs, you have an elastic heel, you have small toes, and when you sweat when you get when you exercise, as opposed to pant. Animals pant, humans sweat. Our legs are developed for long-distance running, and we can outlast almost every other species on the planet in, as far as endurance goes. We're not the fastest species, but we can outlast the other species. That's how our species became the dominant species. And we have this body, and we don't use it. And it doesn't, like I mentioned, when you don't exercise your endurance athletic body, it doesn't do well. Your metabolism becomes unhealthy. You create cytokines and chemicals that actually injure your body if you don't exercise.
So a static lifestyle interferes with wellness actually aggressively, since you're talking about the fact that biologically we are actually designed to be moving instead of sitting around.
That's exactly correct. And most people who don't exercise start losing 1% of their muscle mass each year, starting in your 30s. So by the time you're 60, you might have lost 30% of your muscle mass. And when you lose muscle, you become weaker. When you're weaker, you're less active. And when you're less active, you increase your body fat. And this body fat is like an endocrine organ that produces little hormones that can damage your body. And that's what is killing people every day right now.
Well, there's certainly a lot of evidence to that. I have to do a shout-out to my own parents. And obviously, they're not related to each other, right? And they are 87
Correct.
And 90. And they, I'm telling you, my father just got carded, which means he went to go into something that you had to be 65 to get a free whatever. And the girl at the door said she had to see his license. And they
That's
are
wonderful.
Running around. I mean running around. That you don't know where they are. Their answering machine says, we're either swimming or dancing, clunk, which is true. They are either swimming or dancing all day long. They are doing a massive amount of activity. And they don't do it to stay well. It's just who they are. So they've integrated that into, you know, my mother actually is addicted to swimming, I would have to say, and it's a fantastic addiction. She swims 2 miles every single day at 87 years old. And so that really speaks to what you're talking about. You know, obviously this is just an example, but again, it's both my parents and they are not genetically connected.
Well, that's wonderful. You must have healthy genes as well.
That's for sure. So I lucked out. It's true.
And then, you know, so we need to exercise as a species. We don't really need to do that much exercise to keep our metabolism healthy. There's a lot of recent information out about what's called high-intensity interval training. And studies done at the universities clearly show that with 3 minutes of high-intensity interval training, 3 times a week, you've metabolically reached an excellent state. You don't really need to do much more than that. And by 3 minutes, I mean 3 minutes of high-intensity exercise during a 15-minute period or 20-minute period.
So hold that thought, Dr. Drapkin, because we're going to take just a couple minutes here to hear a word from the Natural Medicine Chest right here on Progressive Radio Network. And when we come back, we will be continuing our discussion. Definitely want to review once again a description of what you just mentioned, high-intensity interval training, as well as intermittent fasting, which I know you are very knowledgeable about. We are speaking today with our guest, Dr. Robert Drapkin, and we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll explore the medicinal properties of the plants of the ephedra genera, focusing on the traditional Chinese ephedra, also known as mahuang.
Many species of the plant ephedra are used today in medicine throughout the world. The most medicinal of these are ephedra sinica, or Chinese mahuang, and ephedra nevadensis, also known as Mormon tea. Most of the research on ephedra has been performed on mahuang, whose stems and branches have been used as a traditional Chinese medicine for over 5,000 years in the treatment of asthma, hay fever, bronchitis, as well as the common cold.
Ephedra species are erect evergreen shrubs which grow in segmented bamboo-like joints reminiscent of straw ending in thin wisps. They typically are desert plants preferring arid conditions on dry, rocky, and sandy slopes. The Chinese ephedra, mahuang, has earned an impressive reputation as a source of the alkaloid chemical called ephedrine. In the West, scientists became interested in the medicinal usage of mahuang after they isolated ephedrine and pseudoephedrine in 1923. Today, synthetic derivatives have become widely used in prescription and over-the-counter medications. In 1993, over 40 million prescriptions in the U.S. contained these alkaloids.
Ephedra and its relatives are considered to act pharmacologically as sympathomimetic compounds. This means that they stimulate the sympathetic part of our central nervous system, responsible for the release of adrenaline, which leads to the fight or flight response. Ephedra also affects the cardiovascular system by increasing the blood pressure and causes a relaxation and dilation of the bronchial smooth muscles in asthmatics. Ephedra can shrink the swelling of the delicate mucous membranes which line the respiratory system, thus drying up watery discharges, unstuffing clogged nasal and sinus passages, which accompany colds, sinus conditions, and allergies.
In both animal and human studies, mahuang has been shown to accelerate weight loss. It has been shown not only to suppress appetite, but to increase the metabolic activity of the adipose or fat tissue. Therefore, ephedra's weight-reducing effects are most significant in individuals who have a low metabolic rate or a sluggish thyroid gland.
Mahuang is a powerful herb which, when abused, can cause some unwanted side effects. Ephedra should not be taken by those with high blood pressure, nervousness or anxiety, insomnia, cardiac conditions, or pregnancy. Studies indicate that when used in conjunction with other Chinese herbs in a traditional formula, mahuang does not have any of these effects and has remarkable beneficial effects on human health.
We recommend consulting a healthcare practitioner knowledgeable in the use of botanical medicine before using mahuang, so you can be further educated about its totality of effects. And before using herbal preparations with mahuang, check to see if you are sensitive to its effects by starting with the minimal dose and working up to a therapeutic dose. Logically, since ephedra is a stimulant itself, it should be used prudently with other stimulants, beverages, or drugs with stimulant effects. Again, consult with your natural healthcare practitioner.
So, listeners, remember mahuang, the traditional Chinese ephedra, and make sure to include it in your natural medicine chest.
And thank you so much for joining us. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And as always, we're wishing you the best. And we'd like to come back with our guest right now, Dr. Drapkin. Are you there, Dr. Drapkin?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. You have been a marvelous guest. I just want to reintroduce you to our audience. We're talking to Robert Drapkin, who is an MD, medical oncology, palliative care, internal medicine, and the real love of his life is allowing people to understand and start doing, not understand, but start doing what he talks about. And two of the things we're going to talk about right now that he actually brought into his life is high-intensity interval training and intermittent fasting. So, Dr. Drapkin, we're talking about you never did any of these things before your 50s?
Never.
That's amazing. So at 50, were you kind of out of shape?
Well, I took my wife and children on a vacation to Cozumel, where we took pictures of ourselves in bathing suits. In those days, you had to send the film out to be developed, and they sent you back pictures. When I received the pictures, I looked and I said to myself, who's the fat guy with the pot belly and the double chin? That was me. Then I decided to join a gym, and I joined a gym, and I was like about 49. And after about a year, I got absolutely nowhere. I was nothing changed. So I started to talk to professional trainers and bodybuilders, and I understood that my diet was wrong, the way I exercised was wrong. I really knew nothing. I was a medical doctor. I thought I knew everything. I knew absolutely nothing about diet, nutrition, and exercise. So I started to, in depth, change my lifestyle, change the way I diet, the way I ate, change how I exercised, and it started to work. And it took years. In order to have a healthy lifestyle, it's really, it's a pathway. There's no beginning to the diet and no end to the diet. It is how you live your life. And I also say if it's a race, it's a race won by the turtle, not the hare. It should be no time pressure, but you should just live your life in a healthy manner with exercise and understanding nutrition and what is healthy to eat and what's healthy not to eat. In regard to intermittent fasting, this is what I do I started to do this as a bodybuilder.
So wait a minute, you went all the way at a pretty advanced age. Not only did you start changing your diet, changing your lifestyle, changing your exercise, as you said, as an evolving process over time after you made that commitment to yourself, but you got all the way to be able to compete in bodybuilding. That is impressive.
Well, that took work. I mean, it didn't happen in one day or even in one year. It took years to be able to be competitive in bodybuilding, but at least I was learning each year, and I was actually making improvements each year.
I just want to interrupt with one thing. We start doing this a little later in life, the one thing that makes it a little bit easier is you start getting in those older classes, which kind of decreases the competition a little bit, but still.
Well, some of the classes are really have all ages and are just open to people at a certain weight class.
Right, right. That's impressive.
I believe anybody, if I can do this at age 50 and older, I believe anybody can do this if they have the knowledge about exercise and if they have the knowledge about diet and nutrition. I believe anybody can do this, and I think everybody, a lot more people should do this, because by this I mean knowing how their body works, eating a healthy diet, and exercising. And in regard to the we can talk about intermittent fasting, which I think is extremely healthy. Why is intermittent fasting extremely healthy?
Let's define it first, because I'm sure most people listening don't even know what you mean by that.
Well, in my definition of a fast is taking in fewer calories than your body needs that particular day. And I aim for a calorie deficit. Now, people discuss calories as being something that's important or something that's not important. You need to have some place to start. You need to have a reasonable place to start, and that's what calories can give us. So I generally calculate what my body needs based on a algorithm provided by the Mayo Clinic on the Internet, for instance, based on your age, height, and weight. It tells you roughly what your body calorie requirements are on a daily basis. I start with a 500 calorie per day deficit. That's my fast. It's fewer calories each day than my body will need to remain stable.
But let me ask you a question. Does it matter what the calories are from? Like, would a bagel be the same as a piece of lean fish, calorie-wise?
Well, That's a very good question. Now, the answer to that is very simple. It depends on your goals. If your goal is to lose weight, it doesn't really matter what you eat. But if you don't eat a healthy diet, you can achieve the same weight loss, but you might be losing more muscle than you are fat if you don't eat a healthy diet. So it's, and metabolically your body may suffer if you don't eat foods that are good for your body. But as far as simple weight loss is concerned, it almost doesn't matter what you eat as long as you consume fewer calories than your body needs. You may not feel well, you may not be energetic, and you could even be, your blood glucose could be elevated, and you could be losing muscle mass, and you could be feeling fairly poorly at that time. That's not the goal. That's not my goal, and that shouldn't be what people's goals are. You should aim for a healthy lifestyle where you feel energetic. If you lose weight, it's quite clear that in any species that loses weight, you will live longer. Every animal study where there's a calorie decrease, the animals live longer. Same with human beings. It's hard to do prospective randomized studies on this topic because it may be deemed against the norms that we generally establish. It's hard to require people not to eat a healthy
right.
diet.
But it is really interesting when they look at the epidemiological studies. Sometimes even when there has been a tragedy in an area, like war, times of war, when people actually have less food available, and there seems to be an epidemiological study that can be done on a group like that. Wasn't their choice, but it happened. And they actually did see a decrease in a lot of the systemic diseases and illnesses that used to be rampant in that population, but actually the incident was much lower after they had this, deprivation.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And some of the early studies were actually done in hospitals at a time when in the 20s and 30s when you could actually keep people in a hospital for a month where their entire diet could be controlled as well as their activity level. And those who were on half their calorie requirements lived longer, their diabetes disappeared, their hypertension disappeared. We can also study... It's hard to study this today, but clearly the data is there that a fast decrease in calories will make you live longer. Now, what happens to your body when you decrease your calorie intake or your energy intake? We could call it energy intake. Because your brain recognizes that immediately and slows your metabolic rate down. Your body is designed to remain constant. And when you decrease calories, your brain recognizes that and decreases your metabolic rate. One of the chemicals involved in this, or one of the hormones involved in this, is called leptin. Leptin is a hormone made by fat cells. So with fewer fat cells, leptin decreases, and your brain recognizes that and decreases your metabolic rate. That's where the intermittent fasting comes in. A refeed, when you actually increase your calories higher transiently, will bring back your leptin, will increase your leptin, and your brain will not decrease your metabolic rate. So it's important to fast for several days in a row and then have a refeed.
So exactly now let's talk a little bit more specifically, Dr. Drapkin, what you mean by fasting. So just not eating anything but water for 3 days? Like exactly how would you do it?
My fast would be a 500 calorie per day deficit with the goal of losing 1 pound of body fat per week.
Okay, so this is just a deficit, not just 500
yes.
calories a day. So you figure out what you would need, age, weight, height. There's lots of easy ways to do that right online. And then you would actually analyze what you're going to eat, and you would be sure that you're eating 500 calories under that amount. I just want to be clear, you're not actually saying eat 500 calories, which is very, very little.
That's correct. Now, everything really depends. You have to be a little flexible in your thinking here, because for a diet to work, well, if you're on a diet or a fast, your body is changing. And eventually you have to change what you do in order to keep up with your body. There are many people in this country who've actually written books why diets don't work. The reason diets don't work is they're relatively fixed. They don't adjust as your body changes. So you must adjust what you do as your body changes in order to accomplish your goals. Now, your goals can be measured, and it's essential that you measure your progress somehow. The easiest way to measure your progress, even though it's inaccurate, is by weighing yourself every day. And so in addition to writing down what you eat in your diary, you write down what you weigh that morning. Another important measure is your waist size, because your waist size is a direct measure of visceral body fat. And it is direct and easy and inexpensive to do it that way. Likewise, your weight is an indirect measure of fat loss, but it also measures body composition, and you could be losing muscle as well. That's when exercise becomes important, because with exercise, you intend to increase your muscle, maintain or actually increase your muscle mass. And that's important as far as keeping your energy level up, as far as having an active lifestyle. And exercise actually is not as important in weight loss as much as diet. But exercise is important in keeping your cells metabolically healthy, so you can remain energetic and remain active and feel good. So that's why it's both diet and exercise that are important in keeping a healthy lifestyle. And our society is full of things that make it difficult to have a healthy diet. Our commercials for foods tend to stress foods that are really not healthy. And very few people actually exercise.
They all say they will on January 1st. You know, we're at the top of the year with our show here today. So you know what? We're going to take one more little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. I absolutely adore the discussion that you're sharing, very specific information of what you mean by intermittent fasting. It's not so much, really. It's not like not eating for a week. Oh, my God, people think, they would die if they didn't do that. And, of course, you can die if you never eat. Obviously, there's starvation. But you're talking about cutting calories for a few days a week. How many days a week are you recommending that people do that?
Well, I recommend 6 days out of seven.
Okay.
With 1 day of refeeding each week.
Okay, so we're going to talk about that more when we come back. And listeners, you're going to hear about some other wonderful shows that are available to you on Progressive Radio Network. One of the best things about Progressive is you can come to prn.fm, or just type in Progressive Radio Network in your search, and you will come to the station's homepage. Then go to Shows. Go down to N for Natural Nurse, and you will see the archives of all the shows. We have over 200 shows of the thousands that we have done. We have 200 right here on Progressive Radio Network. It's a wonderful archive. You can download the shows. You can listen to them again. You can, what was intermittent fasting about? Let me go back and listen to Dr. Robert Drapkin's show. And you can get all kinds of shows there, Natural Nurse shows, as well as all the other fabulous shows that are available to you right here on Gary Knowles Network, Progressive Radio Network. We will be right back with more after the break.
PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
This is Guy McPherson. Join me and Mike Sliva with Nature Bats Last Radio on prn.fm. Catch us Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. on the East Coast. You can rate the show on iTunes, and if you don't catch us live, you can catch us 24/7 in the PRN archives. That's 8 p.m. Eastern Time with Nature Bats Last on PRN.fm.
Love, lust, and laughter. Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm your host, Dr. Diana Wiley, a board-certified sex therapist and a marriage and family therapist. Guests, colleagues, authors are interviewed, and we sometimes dispense advice to create a format that is both informative and entertaining. If you can't listen live, go to the archives and even rate the show on iTunes. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope that you are coming with us.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Normally, you would hear the Progressive Commentary Hour Monday evenings, 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. However, as of today, we're going to be having it every Tuesday, 7 to 8 p.m. So just change your calendar, please. Change your schedule. Tuesday, 7 to 8 for the Progressive Commentary Hour.
Thank you for listening to PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Much for joining us once again right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We love to hear from you. So go to naturalnurse.com, click contact, send us an email, or Facebook The Natural Nurse, and send us a message or a comment on that page in terms of our show today with Dr. Robert Drapkin, MD, or any other thing you'd like to talk about, such as how do you join us in Jamaica on our wonderful coming Echo Tours for Cures. We also have a Facebook page for that. It's Echo Tours for Cures Jamaica. You can see pictures of past trips where we actually stay, and we have a full EchoToursForCures.com website as well with everything you need to know about that trip. If you'd like to join us virtually and take a class online where you get certified in herbal medicine and many other aspects of holistic life, you can do the same. Anybody, anywhere, anytime can have a class with myself and Dr. Eugene Samperone. We have many classes that are posted virtually, and we also do online real-time webinars and lectures. So we can do that for you, and we're even more recently doing it for your group, which is wonderful, where we come on through Skype and actually give a lecture to a group. So the possibilities are endless. We love to hear from you. Our guest today is Dr. Robert Drapkin, MD, and he's a healthcare provider certified in medical oncology and palliative care and internal medicine, brilliant physician who took his own health into his own hands. If you go to my website, naturalnurse.com, right on the top, it says, your health is in your hands. Wouldn't you agree, Dr. Drapkin?
Completely.
And you
we are responsible for our own health.
That's so amazing that at the age of 50, which some people would consider it over the hill, you looked at a picture of yourself. Interesting, because Dr. Life did the same thing. He showed that on a boat that he was on a vacation. Same kind of story where he had that wake-up call. It's fantastic when people make that decision, especially someone like yourself who is a well-respected and highly trained medical doctor. So you're able to do it, and you're busy. You're still working now. And yet, how do you fit exercise into your life? That's a question I often get from patients.
Well, I often get, when I ask my patients, what do you do for exercise? They say, well, I'm real tired when I come after work and I walk my dog. I mean, to me, that is, you know, it's important that people understand that it's exercise is absolutely necessary for their body to remain healthy. You don't have to do that much, as long as, but you do need to do it a minimum three times a week. And all you need is about 3 minutes of high-intensity interval training. That high-intensity interval training three times a week will get you, keep yourselves metabolically healthy. By high-intensity interval training, it can be done with walking, to start walking, or it could be done on a treadmill, or it could be done on an elliptical trainer, or it could be done in a swimming pool. In general, what high-intensity interval training requires is that you start your exercise. Say, so you start walking outdoors, and you walk for 3 or 4 minutes, getting blood circulating to your legs, and you're feeling relatively good. And then for initially 30 seconds, you run or walk or jog as hard as you can, initially 30 seconds. Then you stop and you get back to your walking, your normal pace, for another 3 to 4 minutes.
Okay, so let me hear that again. So let's say you're taking a walk. Like, I walk 3 miles every day.
Walk for 3 or 4 minutes, mm-hmm. getting blood circulating, and then you go all out as much as you can for 30 seconds.
So by
seconds.
All out, you mean break into a run?
If you can. Or fast walk, or
a jog,
walk. Whatever
much
you can
faster.
Do.
Okay.
Whatever you can do for 30 seconds, gradually you'd like to build that to 1 minute. Then you get back to your base pace of walking for another 3 to 4 minutes, and then you do your high intensity for another 30 seconds to a minute, whatever you can do. And you repeat this sequence a minimum of 3 times, probably a maximum of 5 times. And then you're done for your cardiovascular exercise.
So how long would that whole section be? Like, let's say the walk should be how long, and then how many times would you want to break into that maximum effort?
You could do that between 12 and 20 minutes, depending
on
what you can do. And that's then you're done. You need to do that at 12 to 20 minutes only 3 times a week, like Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So literally in 60 minutes or 36 to 60 minutes, you're done for that week. You don't need to spend a lot of time doing cardiovascular exercise to get the maximum metabolic benefit of the exercise.
Now, should you be sweating at that point? After, you know, a 30 seconds, you're probably not going to break into a sweat.
Well, everybody's a little different, but if you do it correctly after your second cycle, you will be sweating. So certainly after your third cycle, you'll be sweating. And that's a good measure of what you can do as far as what your body can handle. Another interesting measure of whether you're doing an intensive exercise or not is your ability to talk while you're doing the high-intensity part. If you can't talk a complete sentence when you're doing your high-intensity, you're getting intensive exercise.
So that's a good way to self-test. So let's say you're walking with someone, and then you do, and generally while you're walking, you can talk in the normal pacing. And then when you up it to that high intensity, but did you say 30 seconds is actually enough?
30 seconds was a good place to start.
Okay.
Well, we have to realize that, you know, everybody's different, and not everybody can do a full minute of high intensity right away.
Okay, and you work up to a minute.
You work up to a minute. And during that high-intensity part, you should not be able to talk.
And so that would mean for you something different than it would for someone who's, like, very out of shape. They may just be walking a little faster, and you would have to run to bring yourself to that point.
Yes, but you have to gradually, like I say, your body changes as you do this for a while. You get better at it.
Isn't that fantastic? Now, I'm sure that you've done a lot more than just this to get in the kind of shape that you're in to actually compete.
Yes. Well, the other thing, the other aspect of cardio, of exercise, and there are two general types of exercise. People will argue with me, but in general, there's cardiovascular exercise, which is the kind of exercise you do on a treadmill or elliptical or running outdoors or walking or jogging outdoors. or swimming. The other type of exercise is called resistance training, where you're actually exercising and maintaining or building muscle fiber tissues. And that's important also. And I recommend that people, after they're comfortable with their cardiovascular exercise, consider 3 days a week of resistance training for another 20 to 30 minutes. By that, I mean cut your body into three sections. Say on Monday you do resistance training after your cardiovascular called pushing, where you actually exercise the muscles of your chest, shoulders, and triceps. By pushing, I mean exactly that. You are pushing upwards, you're pushing forward, then you're pushing down. Those exercise the pushing muscles of your shoulders, chest, and triceps. And you only need to do that once a week, the pushing exercises. The next day, say Tuesday, say you exercise pushing on Monday. Tuesday, you don't do any resistance training. Wednesday, you would do your legs. And by legs, we know that the biggest muscles are in your legs, and basically just simply stepping up on doing some stairs will give you a significant amount of exercise to all the muscles of your legs. Stairs or just stepping up on a bench or just squatting down, just moving up and down will exercise your legs. And you do that until the muscles are tired. When they get tired, you can stop. And that would be your Wednesday leg exercises. And on Friday, you would do what's called pulling exercises. Exercise the muscles of your back and biceps. And by pulling, I mean the same movement. You would raise your hand straight up and then pull down on against resistance. This is best done in a gym with the equipment that's in a gym. The next exercise would be holding your hand straight out and pulling back toward your chest against some resistance. And the final exercise would be for your biceps to actually put your hands down and then against resistance pull your forearm up.
Well, Dr. Drafkin, I'm going to have to stop you there because, believe it or not, we have run out of time. But you gave people a magical formula that you yourself have used, and I'm sure there's more to it as well, to completely change their life that you have done as an individual, as a physician. You've seen the results, and there's no better intervention. There's no supplement. There's no one pill that will do this for you. You must follow Dr. Drafkin's advice if you want to move into your own state of ultimate health that's available to you right now through your own actions. So take your health into your hands, because your health is in your hands. Thank you so much, Dr. Drafkin, for being our guest today. And we'll send you a link to this show so you can actually post it on your website, which is drrobertmdfacp.com. That link will be posted under the show once it's archived on PRN. And thank you so much for being our guest today.
Thank you for inviting me.
And bye. Thank you, listeners, for listening one more time to another Dr. Z and the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Give us a holler at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Until next time, stay healthy.